You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Good afternoon. Reporting remotely for WFHB, this is Benedict Jones.
And I'm Lucinda Larnock. This is the WFHB Local News for Thursday, June 17th, 2021.
Later in the program, WFHB correspondent Max Campbell speaks with two organizers of the Bloomington Renters Association, Andrew Gunther and Vox Booker. More coming up in today's feature reports.
Also coming up in the next half hour, on Saturday, Bloomington will host a Juneteenth celebration from 3 to 6:30 p.m. at Switchyard Park. Juneteenth commemorates the date the last group of those who had been enslaved in the United States were informed of their freedom. More in today's headlines. But first, your local news brief.
From WFHB, this is the local news brief for Thursday, June 17th. I'm Robert Robinson. The City of Bloomington will be hosting a Juneteenth event at Switchyard Park this Saturday from 3 to 6:30 p.m. The event will feature food, treats, games, and scannable QR codes with information on the history of Juneteenth. Attendees may also bring gently used shoes to donate to a Delta Sigma Theta alumni chapter shoe drive. The Monroe County Health Department will also be providing free COVID-19 vaccines. The Indiana Department of Natural Resources has announced that the CRISP charity motorcycle ride will take place on June 26th this year. Riders can choose one of several routes running through six of Indiana's state parks. The event will feature an all-you-can-eat buffet breakfast at Hardy Lake State Park, a poker run at Versailles State Park, and lunch discounts at Clifty Falls and Spring Mill State Parks. Proceeds will go to Friends of Hardy Lake, which provides funding and volunteer service to Indiana State Parks. Those interested can register at indianastateparksride.org. The Monroe County Public Library and its Ellisville branch will rescind some of their COVID-related restrictions this Monday. Both libraries will be resuming their usual hours of operation, will cease to enforce library capacity and time limits, and are scheduling a wide range of educational and children's events. Hours and programs can be found on the library website. According to the latest Indiana Department of Health numbers, 750,432 total Hoosiers have had COVID-19. 13,344 Hoosiers are confirmed to have died from the virus. The federal public health emergency remains in effect, and the COVID-19 vaccine is available for free to all Indiana residents aged 12 and up. That's all for today's local news brief. For WFHB, I'm Robert Robinson.
At its June 16th meeting, the Bloomington City Council resumed discussion on occupancy affidavits. Director of Bloomington Housing and Neighborhood Development, John Zodi, presented changes made to a resolution that would require tenants and their landlords to sign an affidavit confirming the number of residents meets occupation limits. He said the ordinance would no longer require landlords to file the affidavit with hand to avoid privacy issues.
If it were submitted to the department, it's subject to public records requests, which we don't want to compromise the confidentiality of any tenants on a general scale. So if we have to request one for an over-occupancy investigation, or if an inspector requested one at the inspection and it wasn't provided, the landlord or property manager would need to send it in later. In that case, we would have affidavits on file at the office, but not en masse. And so we feel that respects the privacy issue a little better.
Resident Jordan Evans spoke in opposition to the resolution. As the president of the Monroe County Apartment Association, he said he believes the resolution addresses a problem that does not exist in Bloomington.
It has been claimed that there is an over-occupancy in Bloomington. No data has been presented to support this assertion, and in the past 3 years, no ordinance violation cases have been filed alleging that a landlord or tenant over-occupied a property. A review of U reports over the last 3 years reveal only 15 complaints submitted alleging overoccupancy. Of those, 3 were found to be invalid complaints. 6 were complaints about unregistered rentals. So that gives you the final number of 6 over 3 years. With approximately 29,000 rental permits issued in Bloomington, this means that less than 0.001% of rental units are subject to overoccupancy complaints per year.
Councilmember Susan Sandberg supported the resolution. She argued that the low number of overoccupancy cases is because of the efforts of Bloomington's HAND department.
It may be rare, and that's a good thing, because part of having a strong HAND department that regulates rental properties is that's a good thing. That's a very, very good thing for the city of Bloomington.
Council members voted to approve the resolution 5-3, with council members Isabel Piedmont Smith, Kate Rosenbarger, and Matt Flaherty dissenting.
On Saturday, Bloomington will host a Juneteenth celebration from 3 to 6:30 p.m. at Switchyard Park. Juneteenth, also known as Freedom Day, Jubilee Day, or Liberation Day, commemorates the date the last group of those who had been enslaved in the United States were informed of their freedom. Originating in Galveston, Texas, Juneteenth is now celebrated each year on the anniversary of the June 19th announcement by Union Army General Gordon Granger, declaring freedom from slavery in Texas. The news broke in Texas 2.5 years after President Lincoln issued the Emancipation Proclamation in 1863. The local celebration of the holiday will feature free food, music, and scannable QR codes containing information on the history of Juneteenth. Event organizer Shatoya Moss, City of Bloomington Safe and Civil Cities Director, shared more about Saturday's upcoming program.
For this Saturday, we are going to be providing the opportunity to celebrate freedom and also support some of our local Black business and just, you know, get together, see some community members that we haven't seen in a while. It will take place at Switchyard Park at 3 p.m. on Saturday, June 19th. We are having the splash pad. The park will be open. We're also going to be bringing some games for community members to play. So the Giant Connect 4, some giant Jenga, cards, dominoes. And of course, we can't forget the secret ingredients, some good food. We have Carson's Barbecue supplying us with some pulled pork, pulled chicken, baked beans, potato salad, also some hot dogs. And we'll have some snacks too for the kids. So definitely it is a family-friendly event. All are invited. We encourage people to bring blankets and chairs. We will be using the entire lawn as well as the shelter. The website is up and we are asking for volunteers to come help and support this event. And I'm pretty excited. I hope we see a lot of folks come out.
Moss says the event is free to attend, but there will be Black-owned businesses on site offering products for sale.
Everything for the food and the activities and just coming is absolutely free. We will have a check-in table. We'll be handing out fans for any community member who would like one. We will have some small Black-owned business vendors there. We will have Humanity by Miss Jasmine Sutton, who will be selling teas and other goodies. We'll have another young lady named Jasmine Sykes, who is the owner of Candy Treats. She makes delicious candy apples and fresh juices. We have Raheem Elmore, who will be doing custom airbrush t-shirts. So if y'all all like to, you know, get a nice outfit for Juneteenth, you can go to him or you can go to ITS to here. We'll also be selling Juneteenth t-shirts, probably some masks and other wear. And then we'll also have Christina Ellum, who will be doing free face painting for anyone. So we were doing that for the kids, but the adults can get their face painted as well. And a few information booths.
Moss says that while the protest movement is important and should not be ignored, she wants Juneteenth to be a day of celebration.
I think protest in itself is always going to happen. With Juneteenth in particular, I'm really hoping that this is a moment of celebration. The country has been through a lot of national unrest, and this is just a moment for us to really think about our ancestors and what they had to overcome, and as a community come together and really celebrate the fact that we do have freedom. We don't want to put the Black Lives Matter movement on the back burner. Of course, that is always on the forefront. And it's a really powerful thing to educate others in a way of celebration, to say, come, look how people of color, how Black people, how we celebrate, and how we're not having to try to relive these things that torn us down in the past. We still arise above it.
Those attending the event will be asked to adhere to COVID-19 safety measures. Fully vaccinated community members are not required to wear masks.
Monroe County Health Administrator Penny Caudill presented the county's health recommendations for communal living at the June 15th Monroe County Board of Health meeting. She said the recommended occupancy for houses where all non-exempt occupants are fully vaccinated is 90%. Caudill highlighted one major change over the need to quarantine entire houses.
The last changes were in number 13. The Monroe County Health Department does not anticipate the need to quarantine entire facilities when members achieve a high rate of COVID-19 vaccination. Residents and staff are expected to comply with IU testing protocols, case investigations, contact tracing, and isolation or quarantine protocols as needed. Isolation and quarantine will be managed on an individual case basis unless there's a need to expand quarantine based on a high level of infection or susceptibility within a facility.
Board member Dr. Robert Wren asked what the Board of Health would do if Indiana University is not able to require students and staff members to get the COVID-19 vaccine. Monroe County Commissioner of Health Dr. Thomas Sharp suggested that they should have to pay for testing out of pocket.
My suggestion would be, you don't want to get vaccinated. You have to get tested twice a week. It'll cost you $200 per time, payable in advance. And if you don't pay it, then you're out of the university, or you're off the staff. If you don't want to get, that's fine, but you got to pay your way, because IU paid over $10 million to do the mitigation testing. And I don't think that's at this point, if you're just not getting vaccinated, I don't think you deserve that privilege of having someone else pay your bill.
Board members voted to support the regulations unanimously.
Bloomington Police Chief Mike Dykoff presented two officer promotions to the Bloomington Board of Public Safety on June 15th. He asked that officers Thomas Cruzenman and Sean Sincade be promoted to senior police officer. Board member Luis Fuentes Roa asked for clarification on the promotions. He questioned Dykoff on whether these promotions were merit or time-based.
You said it's 1 to 5 years. So it's the case that we hire a new officer within 5 years, they get promoted, or what happens if they don't get promoted? My point being, the different question, or same question, different way. Is this really a promotion or like a step forward? Is this what we do with our officers? Do they complete if they're just doing their jobs, or is this really a promotion in the sense that you've earned it because you've
done?
Okay.
It's both. You can get it before 5 years if they are for a variety of reasons. But someone just working every day doing their job at 5 years is kind of the next step up.
Board members voted to approve both promotions unanimously.
The Monroe County Plan Commission discussed rezoning the trails at Robertson Farm on its June 15th meeting. Petitioner Kevin Schmidt presented a plan to rezone the property from Estate Residential 1 to High Density Residential. He said the developers requested high density so they could build more diverse housing, not so they could build more houses.
Our intent is to build a MR or less dense area with the flexibility of housing type of HR zoning. So I want to make sure that that's 100% clear. We are proposing a 3.6 lots per acre. MR allows 4.8 lots per acre. HR allows 7 plus lots per acre. We are not proposing anything higher. We're actually proposing less than MR allows. So all we're asking for is to meet what we believe is a quote from the comprehensive plan saying these neighborhoods are intended to serve a growing market demand of new housing choices on a full spectrum of demographic groups.
Commissioner D. Owens asked about the term attainable housing. She commented that even homes in the lower cost range will cost more once the houses are built and after HOA fees.
I noticed the term affordable housing is not being used, rather the term attainable housing is being used. And, you know, I see the lowest price in the plan is $250,000. When you add in the HOA fee for all of the pieces that are going to need to be covered, I think that is not all that attainable for people that we're pretending that we want to put up housing for. And then on the other end of the spectrum, this is going to take 7 years to build. In 7 years, I don't see a $475,000 house being a $475,000 house.
Commissioner Julie Thomas spoke about rural versus urban zones. She mentioned this development crosses into the gray area between the two.
We are a rural area. And the area surrounding Bloomington is certainly not that right now. And that's something we have to continue to struggle with, is where does, you know, we have this in our comp plan, keep rural, rural, and urban, urban. And this is one of those in-between places, and that gives me a lot of pause.
Commissioner Jim Stainbrook motioned to send a negative recommendation to county commissioners and waive a final hearing of the rezone. The motion failed 4-4. With Commissioners Jim Stainbrook, Julie Thomas, Margaret Clemens, and Dee Owens voting for. The final hearing for the rezone will be at the July 20th meeting.
The Monroe County Redevelopment Commission spoke with employees of the City of Bloomington about annexation at its June 16th meeting. Reedy Financial Group partner Gary Smith gave an update on annexation's effect on county TIFs. He said the projected financial impact on Monroe County has gone down considerably as more research has been done on annexation.
The original $300,000 impact in question was simply carried over from that original report. Since then, we've updated it to reflect the actual 2020 and 2021 abstract data. And the actual impact that we've quantified is much less. It's around $76,000 per year. And as I'll share later, it's not really a true impact. It's just more of a reduction in the growth that your redevelopment commission is experiencing. It's not a loss in revenue that you would experience from 2020 to 2021, for example.
Commissioner Jim Shelton asked if the commission would still control the money collected from TIFs after 2024 if annexation takes place. City Legal Counsel Steve Unger said that excess money collected from TIFs would work the same way.
Debt obligations are outstanding, you would have control over within the scope of the redevelopment statute in terms of how you can spend those monies and use them. Or, you know, if you significantly overcollect, there can be an obligation to pass through to the underlying taxing units, which wouldn't be the city, but it would be the schools and the library,
and the townships,
for example. Okay.
The next redevelopment commission meeting is scheduled for July 21st.
WFHB correspondent Max Campbell speaks with two organizers of the Bloomington Renters Association, Andrew Gunther and Vox Booker. The Bloomington Renters Association just hosted a public event last weekend to announce the creation of the Renters Advocacy Group. On what the organization hopes to accomplish, we turn to WFHB correspondent Max Campbell for more.
In Bloomington, growing concerns over lack of representation for renters have led housing advocacy group Neighbors United to begin the formation of a new Renters Neighborhood Association. Intended to be an alternative to the current homeowner-dominated neighborhood associations that can be found around Bloomington, the Renters Association will provide renter-specific support in the protection of their rights and representation in citywide decisions. WFHB met with Andrew Gunther, a local renter involved with Neighbors United, who shared his thoughts on how he would like to see the Renters Association take shape.
If I were to have, you know, my dream come true, it would be a multi-layered, multi-tiered system organization that seeks to firstly educate renters on things such as renters' rights, you know, how to read your lease, how to report landlords that aren't doing what they're supposed to do under the law to hand. to provide those types of resources to renters, you know, seeking rent assistance from township trustees, that sort of thing, to provide that information in a location easy to find that for renters, as well as to organize renters to advocate for policies that will benefit all people in Bloomington, but specifically renters. So policies that focus on housing affordability, housing quantity, housing quality, that focus on, you know, how we use our land and how we use our resources are definitely important and have a vast impact on everyone in Bloomington, but particularly renters who are some of the most prone to the influxes and sways of the housing market. You know, even though we make up 65% of Bloomington and something like 50% of Monroe County, I believe, we are definitely not represented that way in our local government. I believe all those members of the Bloomington City Council and the mayor are homeowners. And it's one of those things where I'm not saying that the association will necessarily advocate for people to be elected who rent, but I think that we will be looking for people to in city government to take a more renter-friendly approach when they are voting on issues that affect us.
Neighbors United hosted a public event this past Sunday afternoon to hear from other community members and initiate the creation of the Renters Association. Gunther, who was present for the event, touched on his initial takeaways from attendance.
When I went to the event, I was impressed by the variety of ideas that came forward. You know, there was an activity where people went around and talked about or wrote down ideas that they had for how housing can be improved and how we can improve renters' experiences in Bloomington. And a lot of them were things that I just said. And I think that it was very cool to gather with like-minded individuals and be on the same page. There wasn't really any disagreement. Every time someone mentioned something, everyone else went, oh yeah, I was thinking about that too. So I think that there is a lot of core issues that renters can agree on in Bloomington and can organize around. And it was cool to see that in practice.
Though the Renters Association is still in the early stages, it hopes to organize as quickly and efficiently as possible to meet the immediate needs of Bloomington renters. The call-out meeting on Sunday was the first step in the establishment of the Renters Association. Neighbors United organizer Vox Booker spoke to WFHB about organizational goals for the Renters Association, as well as the potential services this group aims to provide to Bloomington residents.
First, I think it's maybe important to say why a Renters Neighborhood Association, because the city already has the groundwork laid for neighborhood associations. So it's best to kind of piggyback off that existing infrastructure that the city has. I would like to see us eventually create a tenants union with the mission of creating a organization that can give voice to tenants' concerns. Right now, tenants, renters make up 65% of the city. While we see a very well-developed structure that the neighborhood associations have to communicate with the city and communicate with each other, that doesn't exist for renters. And part of that we saw with Director of HAND, John Zodi, reaching out to Neighborhood United and asking if we could speak on behalf of renters. So I think that's the goal, is to just give voice to those who have been voiceless in the city. I have been fortunate enough for the last 2 years that I was chair of the county's Affordable Housing Commission. I'm still a member of the Affordable Housing Commission, but one of the questions I receive most as chair and as even a case manager in this community is where to find housing if someone is on Section 8 or if someone has a limited budget, you know, where can they live in the city? I think a neighborhood association could provide that information, like, you know, who are the landlords that take Section 8? Who are maybe some of the best ranked communities as far as landlord tenant interaction, and creating a unified voice to engage the city when we have contentious matters come up, such as the, you know, the issue with the UDO and duplexes. Having the Renters Association would be a way to also ensure that the city is communicating in a more equitable manner, in a more ethical manner as well.
For many, this Renters Association will provide Bloomington locals access to resources and information not previously available. those associated with the Renters Association stressed its inclusivity and encouraged anyone interested to get involved.
I would recommend that anyone who rents in Bloomington within the city limits and wants to get involved, and I would even encourage people who rent who are in any of the proposed annexation zones to come get involved with Neighbors United. They can go to the website, which is neighborsunited.info. You can sign up with your email there and you'll be put on the email list to receive information that has to do with the Renters Association. Neighbors United is acting as an incubator for the Renters Association. So they're seeking to give their expertise to get us started, and then we'll be our own independent organization. So we're hoping to get people involved through Neighbors United, which shares, like I said, a lot of goals in common with the Renters Association, trying to get people involved with both as best as we possibly can. Even people who are homeowners are welcome to, you know, try and lend any of their expertise or volunteer hours as they see fit to the Renters Association. But the Renters Association is obviously a renter-centric organization, meaning that leadership opportunities, speaking opportunities, that sort of thing will primarily go towards members who are renters.
As renters themselves, both Gunther and Booker say they have firsthand experience that allows them to accurately diagnose many of the most significant problems renters in Bloomington are facing today.
The Renters Association provides a great opportunity for, I don't want to say that we're unionized, but for renters to have an organization that really puts their interests first. There's a lot going on day to day in the city that renters may not be aware of that really impact them. For example, this week on Wednesday, the city council is voting on or set to vote on an amendment to city ordinance that would require the familial relationships of renters to be written down in an affidavit and signed, which, you know, I personally think violates the privacy rights of renters. I think that, you know, speaking as someone who is openly gay, I know plenty of people who are not openly gay, but are gay, who don't necessarily want people on the public record that they're living with someone of the same gender. I also know that people who live in recovery centers, for example, don't want their names on a list of people who live in recovery centers. So I think that it violates the rights of renters. And I think that that's something that would fly under the radar for most people had Neighbors United not organized around it to try and get it voted down. And I anticipate the Renters Association will be keeping an even closer eye on issues relating to renters in Bloomington. And I anticipate that we will be one of the main, if not only, sources of information to notify people when their rights or their livelihoods are in danger.
The overwhelming issue is going to be affordability or the lack of affordability. The next issue, I would say, is that we see that renters are treated as sort of a substandard group in our city. There are a lot of regulations right now. The city council is debating affidavits for rentals to enforce the UDO requirement that you can only have four unrelated occupants in a renter unit. There are no types of restrictions on how many people can live in a house if they own the house. So I don't really see the justification that the city has to actually engage renters differently. There are some also issues of just who do you complain to, understanding your rights as a tenant, how to interact with your landlord, and simple things like, you know, I have a bus stop that doesn't have a light on it. To be honest, I'm already a dark-skinned fellow. So at the bus stop at night, you know, I had to shine the light from my phone or, you know, the bus driver won't see me. If there was a Renters Neighborhood Association, we would be eligible for the monies that the city sets aside for neighborhood associations. So we could get a grant from HAND to put lights on bus stops for, you know, communities that are rental heavy. Because what we see is a lot of communities that have bus stops that are in single family housing all well lit. But, you know, other neighborhoods aren't as well appointed.
Local renters interested in getting involved with Neighbors United or the Renters Neighborhood Association may visit the Neighbors United website for more information. Updates on the development of the Renters Association are expected to follow in the coming weeks. For WFHB, I'm Max Campbell.